At Giant Eagle, you may have spotted the Stacker. With uncanny My Perks ability, she stacks up the perks to choose either dollars off or up to 20% off her entire grocery bill. The Stacker, stacking up huge savings with My Perks. Find your My Perksonality and transform your shopping into free gas and groceries. Full details at GiantEagle.com/MyPerks. Perks cannot be earned or redeemed on select items. Restrictions apply.
This hour of the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by You Build It. There is a lot of news happening all around the world and right here at home. Let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? Happening now.
So the Democrats are ready to impeach Donald Trump. They are ready. They're gearing up for a fight. Nancy Pelosi today announced that she is starting this impeachment inquiry. It's all due to this whistleblower complaint that they haven't even read, all based on a phone call with the president of Ukraine that they didn't actually hear. But they are ready for impeachment.
The president has admitted to asking the president of Ukraine to take actions which would benefit him politically. The actions of the Trump presidency revealed the dishonorable fact of the president's betrayal of his oath of office, betrayal of our national security,
betrayal
of the integrity of
betrayal.
Our elections.
Write
Therefore,
that down, betrayal.
Today, I'm announcing the House of Representatives moving forward with an official impeachment inquiry. I'm directing our six committees to proceed with their investigations under that umbrella.
Which is kind of interesting because they've already been proceeding under that umbrella for the last several months. Jerry Nadler and his whole issue with Lewandowski that we talked about last week, that was about trying to impeach the president, and they are looking for details to jump onto and exploit to convince the American people that we have to get rid of this president. They don't have anything yet. Nothing substantial, not substantial enough to convince the American public that what they're doing is just and right. They don't have that. They're looking for it. But they're going to continue to go down this pathway with the intent of impeaching without any of the evidence. Progressives have called for the documents about the call where Trump supposedly offered some sort of quid pro quo with the president of Ukraine to investigate the ties between Joe Biden's son and a corrupt company. The progressives have asked for the whistleblower complaint. Well, not only earlier on today did the president say he was going to release the transcripts of that phone call tomorrow. We're now learning, according to White House sources speaking with CNN, they're also going to release the actual whistleblower complaint. You're starting to hear some folks like Chris Hayes over at MSNBC saying, well, you know, that transcript of the phone call can't really be trusted. Show us the whistleblower complaint. Okay. It appears that we're going to get the whistleblower complaint, possibly tomorrow, if not Thursday. Now, there are two giant holes in the premature declaration that it's time to impeach. And it has everything to do with those items that have not yet been released. What was actually said to the Ukrainian president? What was actually said in the whistleblower complaint that was supposedly done by someone who didn't get the information firsthand? And what a lot of people can't quite figure out, unless you follow me on Twitter, because I gave you the answer to this earlier on in the day, twitter.com/JasonRants. Why is Nancy Pelosi doing this right now? We heard earlier today that the president was going to put out the transcript of the phone call. Why not wait 24 hours? Why not wait literally, and really, it's less than 24 hours. We heard he was going to release this, what, around noonish today, maybe 1 o'clock that he was going to release the actual transcript. Then an hour later, Nancy Pelosi comes out announcing that they're going to do this inquiry officially. Why not wait? The answer is really simple. They are using this story having to do with Ukraine as cover because they've already said many, many, many times that they want to impeach. They haven't been able to find anything. This gives off the appearance of some kind of scandal. They know that people aren't going to do their due diligence in looking this up, and they're hoping, they're praying that they're going to be able to find something. But I have a question. Maybe it's a crazy question. Why would the president release documents that show he acted criminally? Why wouldn't he drag his feet and and hold this and claim some kind of privilege, some kind of process? Why wouldn't he just hold on to it as long as humanly possible? Why would he release it if they're going to be able to find some kind of wrongdoing? Doesn't that seem like a little bit of a bad strategy coming from the president? Don't you think there would be someone who would tell him, no, don't do this? Oh my God, look at this transcript. You literally say, I will give you all the money that you want for military aid if only you investigate Joe Biden. Wouldn't someone make him stop? And wouldn't he himself be able to look at that and say, okay, maybe I shouldn't do it. Now, of course, what he ends up putting out there might not look good. It's possible that he said things that look really, really bad, that the optics of which could hurt him politically. Although I would argue I'm not sure this is the type of president who can be hit by bad optics. I don't think it's really done what Democrats had hoped that they do, but there's certainly the possibility of that. Because let's be clear, asking for an investigation into someone who's corrupt is not illegal. It looks really bad, and it does kind of depend on what kind of pressure was actually coming. Because saying, hey, I'm going to withhold funds unless you do this, that 100% would be illegal. And yes, it would be impeachable. But withholding funds in the form of military aid to Ukraine also is not illegal in and of itself. Because he came out today, the president said, hey, basically we did it because we don't want to put too much money up for any of this. Other countries should be donating some money to this cause as well. And by the way, that's an argument that the president has used against UN member countries, including Germany, in the past. So it certainly is believable that that's what this was all about. Did the pressure include a quote-unquote quid pro quo ask? Or was it, hey, by the way, you got to check out Joe Biden because he's doing some illegal stuff. That in and of itself is not going to convince people that anything wrong happened here. But here's the deal. If you want to impeach, go ahead. Go for it. Impeach away. Do what AOC is asking, because she came out after the inquiry announcement by Pelosi. It's all like, yeah, not only do we impeach on this, oh, we've got a long list of stuff.
Well, ultimately, I think what is going on is that the president has committed several impeachable offenses. He
so many.
What
oh
he has
God.
Admitted to okay. is already impeachable, regardless of future.
By the way, I know that, and you heard it in the Pelosi clip too, Patty Murray put out a statement not long ago saying this same line. Oh, what he's already admitted to is totally an impeachable offense. Well, first of all, technically, I suppose that's true, because you can impeach for literally anything. That the House rules allow, if you've got enough votes, you can literally impeach for anything. But everything that he's already said on the record that he did, none of it is criminal. None of it is criminal. Just because AOC says something does not make it so. She lives in an echo chamber of people who live like her, view the world like her, I should say. And I'm sure she's convinced that this is all impeachable, offensive, what he said. When he sent out a tweet today saying presidential harassment, she believes that that is an impeachable offense.
Regardless of future developments, what he's already admitted to is an impeachable offense, among others. I anticipate, and I believe there'll be discussion as to whether when we draft or when the judiciary examines the question on filing potential articles of impeachment, what those articles will include could articulate several different offenses, including emoluments. And
I pray that they file articles of impeachment on the topic of the emoluments clause. Imagine getting in front of the country and making that case. 99.9% of the country, including, by the way, AOC, has no idea what that word even means. They have no idea about the concept of emoluments. They have no idea whatsoever. So if they think this is going to help their cause, oh my gosh, they should rethink what happened to the Republicans when they went out and impeached Bill Clinton, who literally broke the law by perjuring himself. Did not work for them. Ask Newt Gingrich whether or not that was the right move right now. Ask him. He's not going to tell you, oh man, I have no doubts whatsoever. That was the best decision of our lives. Did you see what the Republicans did afterwards? Yeah, they lost a lot of elections. That's what's going to happen here. The politics of this, I have no idea why level-headed thinkers within the Democratic Party, and yes, there are plenty, I don't know why they think this is a smart idea. They are betting against all the odds, that the stuff that Trump voluntarily puts out tomorrow and on Thursday will have some damning evidence. It will not. That's what my gut says. We'll wait and see. I don't think he'd be willing to put it out if there was some damning evidence there. So what have you done yet again? Screamed at the top of your lungs, oh my God, folks, you have to understand what this president is doing to democracy. And you'll have, yet again, nothing to show for it. You can't really get away with that too many times, even if you've got the media on your side. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline. 1-800-465-8770. If you text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to the number 1-800-465-8770, I'll send you a link to my latest blog available at ktth.com, all about how there is a lot of Tacoma gang violence, and yet, for some reason, no one over in Tacoma wants to actually call it gang violence. We'll try to take you through that strategy. Text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending in Seattle?
Hey, it's a day that ends with the letter Y, so I've got another story of a prolific offender striking in the city of Seattle, this time stabbing a random stranger on a light rail train. Jesus Sanchez was charged with second-degree assault and possession of a whole lot of meth. The victim was just trying to enjoy a Husky game on September 14th. Did they enjoy that game on September 14th? Isn't that the one that they really lost? That was a bad one, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it was.
So maybe, I mean, maybe he got lucky and didn't have to deal with it. And by lucky, I mean he was stabbed in his back and had to go and get stitches. It was a serious wound. He was just headed over to Husky Stadium. He was on light rail. He had two young kids with him. Sanchez decided, for some unknown reason, to just stand up and then stab him at least once in the back, according to the court documents. A security officer ended up witnessing what had happened. He followed Sanchez off the train. He called 911. He got cops there. They end up arresting him. They found a folding knife on him and 16 grams of meth. The victim was taken to UW Medical Center. They said he suffered a 1-inch wide and 1/2-inch deep wound. The good news is the stabbing missed vital organs, and he was treated and released about 5 hours later. Shocking to absolutely no one, Cairo 7 TV says Sanchez has a prior criminal history, both as a juvenile and an adult. His history includes possession of a stolen vehicle, malicious mischief, assault in the fourth degree, violation of a no-contact order, and theft. Who's shocked by this story? Whether it's a prolific offender, or whether it's homelessness, we have these stories every single day. These are the easiest stories to find. Literally the easiest story to find. It's not buried. We don't have to go deep onto the Cairo 7 website or try to find something in the Times or Como. It's just there. Because this kind of stuff is happening on a regular basis. It's happening almost every single day. And it's happening because we live in a broken region. We live in a city that doesn't take this sort of stuff seriously, with a council that doesn't want to take on these problems. We come from a city and a county, frankly, with, whether it's Pete Holmes, the Seattle City Attorney, or Dan Satterberg, the King County Prosecutor, who don't actually believe in punishing these people. Yes, they were charged. This dude was charged. How much do you want to bet he's going to be offered a very generous plea deal? I can tell you that because he's got a prior criminal history that we just read. That indicates that he's not really being thrown behind bars. He's actually being let out. Maybe he'll do some time. Maybe he'll get credit for time served. But let's be clear. This is happening because voters let it. Keep that in mind in the back of your head every single day that we do these stories, whether we're talking about it in Seattle or Tacoma, Olympia, Bellevue, Edmonds, Everett, wherever it is. Keep in the back of your mind every single one of these stories and realize that you have an opportunity to change things in November. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending in King County?
Des Moines police want the community to be prepared for an active shooter situation, just being prepared since, you know, it could happen anywhere. It's not likely to happen to you, but it does help to be prepared.
So I think we're always thinking about it. It's, well, how do you react during that moment? If you're within a vicinity, what do you do?
So they're doing some active shooter training. Officer Nathan Chevalier tells Cairo 7 TV that he created this class about 2 years ago. And the goal is basically to teach just random folks who need this kind of training or who want this kind of training how you can survive in different scenarios with an active shooter.
Until they actually participate and know what to do by moving around, by running, by hiding, by defending or fighting, then they don't have that true sense of what it takes to actually do that.
So they literally teach you how to do that. And it's very similar to the training that we've seen on a national level and, frankly, a local level in some places where if you can, the first thing you should do is run away. Right? If you are in a situation with an active shooter and you can safely get away, let's say, God forbid, it's in a school or an office building and it's happening on the other end of the area, if you can safely run, you run. If you can't, because the shooter might be near you, then you hide. You get into a place where that person can't find you. You barricade yourself in a classroom, in a office, or whatever it is, hide. And if you have to, be prepared to fight. Defend yourself. You see a pair of scissors? That's now a weapon that's going to potentially save your life. The next course that he's teaching is scheduled for January.
Our children learn it in school, but as parents, we need to know what they're learning too.
Totally. I'm glad more people are getting more involved with this. They were all speaking, by the way, to Cairo 7 TV. Classes are held at various locations in King County. I do want to question one small part of this. Do people spend that much time really thinking about it? I know that I'm told that we're supposed to, because again, passerbys like this say this.
I think we're always thinking about it.
I don't know if we're always thinking about it. I don't always think about it. I'm one of the most paranoid people that you'll meet. I don't find myself thinking about this. Now, maybe that's my mistake. Maybe I should be thinking about this, but I do understand, and maybe it's because I work in the news and I'm able to compartmentalize some of these things. The fact of the matter is, the reason why most of you know the names of schools in which there was a school shooting is because it happened so rare that we talk about it so much because of how rare and especially shocking it is. But because you're aware of it, it's front of mind. You know Sandy Hook, you know Columbine, you know all of these other schools like Stoneman Douglas. You're able to immediately say, oh, that happened in El Paso. Oh, that happened in Dayton. All of a sudden, you start to convince yourself that, oh my gosh, this is happening all the time. And then at the same time, you've got various activist groups out there that are pretending that we've had one school shooting or one shooting, mass shooting, every single day so far this year. They do that, of course, because they want to scare you and freak you out enough that you're willing to back some of their ideological responses to these shootings. Now, I generally think that there's no nefarious intent as far as people who want to confiscate guns, for example. They don't want to do it because they want to keep you hostage or a slave to the government. They do that because they truly hate guns, they're scared of guns, and they believe that you're going to be safe. I think their ideology blinds them to the reality. But they're putting it out there, and all of a sudden, you're thinking to yourself, oh my gosh, this happens all the time, and then...
I think we're always thinking about it.
You're always thinking about it. And then you go to a movie theater, you go to a stadium, head on over to CenturyLink Field, Safeco, or not, what is it called, T-Mobile Park now? I got it. And then all of a sudden, you're wondering, and then you're freaked out. And I would say, if this is the kind of thing that you're worried about and panicked about, go ahead and sign up for these active shooter classes. But I do want to just take this as an opportunity to remind everybody, you don't have to be defined by that kind of fear. You don't have to be that scared. You can be smart about all of this. You can be prepared as much as you want to be, but you do not need to be scared like that guy seems to be. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text on the Numb Better Tax Resolution Hotline. 1-800-465-8770. When we come back, the executive director of the Immigration Reform Law Institute, his name is Dale Wilcox. They just put out a top 10 list of the worst cities for sanctuary policies. Seattle, of course, was on it. He's going to tell us why when we come back. Welcome back to the Jason Rancho on AM 770, KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. The Immigration Reform Law Institute just released their list of the 10 worst sanctuary communities in the state, and at no surprise, number 5 is Seattle. Although I suppose shocking somewhat in that we're not closer to that number 1 spot. Joining me on the line to discuss is Dale Wilcox. He is the executive director of the Immigration Reform Law Institute. Dale, thank you so much for coming on.
Well, thanks for having me.
So what did you look at? What was the data when you compiled this list?
Yeah, sure. We have undertaken to look closely at those cities who have maintained sanctuary policies and refused to cooperate with federal immigration authorities. And what we've done is we've used the Freedom of Information Act and gotten our hands on records through lawsuits sometimes from ICE and other federal agencies. And we're looking at who is failing to cooperate. And we put together this list based on those numbers. We put together the list also based on, I mean, like you said, it's debatable. You know, Seattle could be higher. We looked at how many detainer requests were ignored. We've looked at recidivism rates, particularly egregious crimes that have occurred after an individual mm-hmm. has been released or an immigration detainer has been ignored.
So what are the consequences of that kind of behavior?
Well, Americans are dying, quite literally. I mean, it's a known fact. We see that in the case of Kate Steinle in California. Here in Seattle, you had mentioned your policy there. You've had a policy since 03, 04. And just June of this year, there was an individual who, a Mexican national, who served 9 months in jail mm-hmm. for raping a wheelchair-bound woman, and he was released. ICE, pursuant to the sanctuary policy there in Seattle, ICE was not contacted to be notified so they could come and pick up this individual and start deportation proceedings. He was released back out into the community. Well, within 3 days, police alleged that he went by the victim's home, dumped her out of her wheelchair, choked her out in front of her 3-year-old. I mean, this is common all around the country.
Yeah, and that, by the way, that's Francisco Carranza Ramirez is the one who was accused of this. We've got a lot of the details, as unfortunate and disturbing as they are, over at KTTH.com.
Yeah, and Seattle itself has ignored, in the time period that we looked at, a 27-month time period, they had ignored 370 ICE detainer requests. Now, ICE detainer requests basically works like this. When an alien is arrested, the fingerprints are taken, sent to the FBI. FBI shares with DHS. Department of Homeland Security will send a detainer request to the local jurisdiction, say, hey, hold on to that person for us. We want to come and get them to start deportation proceedings. Well, the sanctuary jurisdictions refuse to hold these criminal aliens for pickup by ICE. So Seattle has ignored, during this time period, 370 ICE detainer requests. And over 290 of those cases were for what ICE considers threat level 1 yeah. and 2 offenses, rape, murder, assault, and other violent crimes.
Well, in Seattle kind of deals with the triple whammy of just virtue signaling nonsense here, because not only is Seattle a sanctuary city, but it's in King County, which is a sanctuary county, which is in Washington State, which is a sanctuary state. And so when you're talking about Seattle in particular, it seems like it's a no-brainer to be on this list.
Yeah, it's sad. Many of the politicians out there are putting the concerns of dangerous illegal aliens over law-abiding residents. It makes no sense. You know, they say that it's so that aliens will not be scared to report crimes to police. Well, guess what? We have special victims visas and crime victim visas, which would put them on a path to a green card. Police and the feds do not arrest witnesses to crimes and victims of crimes. So that's bogus. What this is about, bottom line here, this is leftist trolling for potential future voters. That's all that it is. It's political games that they're playing with citizens' lives.
Just joining me, I'm talking with Dale Wilcox. He's the executive director for the Immigration Reform Law Institute. They just named Seattle as one of the worst sanctuary cities all across the country. To come in at number 5, the full list, by the way, is up on the web at irli.org. That's for the Immigration Reform Law Institute. What I think is an important distinction to make here is that we're talking about you know, detainer requests coming from people who are already breaking the law. We're not talking about ICE going door to door, nor are we talking about the SPD or the King County Sheriff's Department going door to door asking people for their papers. That's not what this is about at all. In fact, the SPD and King County Sheriff's Department, like most law enforcement agencies in the state, don't ask citizenship data at all to begin with. These are folks who are already breaking laws and have been caught.
You're absolutely right. That's who it applies to. So when these politicians say they're against cooperating with ICE, they really want criminal aliens living amongst their community? And think about this. The same foreign nationals that the politicians claim to be protecting are often the ones who are the victims of these crimes. These foreign nationals go back into their communities and perpetrate crimes on the vulnerable. So they don't want them in their communities. But like I said, you know, these leftist politicians have a more sinister plan. You know, goes right along with the plans to, we'll let felons, they're trolling for votes. They can't get reasonable, rational people to accept their policies, so let's increase our voter base. Let's let felons vote. Let's lower the voting age. Let's let illegal aliens vote. Let's keep the criminals around. We might need their vote. So,
I suppose that's really playing the long game as far as at least the illegal immigrants and voting rights go. But it is certainly peculiar that all of a sudden, at least, we're having these conversations in such a big way. And, you know, to your point, though, Seattle has had this law on the books, the sanctuary policy on the books, for a very long time. Are we actually seeing an increase in sanctuary policies, or are we just seeing an increase in talking about it?
I think during the Trump administration, we are seeing an increase in sanctuary policies. You're seeing jurisdictions all across the country, in principally Democrat-controlled jurisdictions, big cities, institute these policies. And there are numerous anti-borders groups who are behind this push also. They are facilitating the perpetuation of these policies nationwide. And, you know, we need to hold these individuals accountable because people are getting hurt.
Do you think, though, you know, the way that some Republicans talk about immigration is also hurting the cause? You know, I'm aware that this organization, I believe at some point, I think it still is, you guys are sort of the legal arm for the organization FAIR. Federation Federation for American Immigration Reform. You've certainly seen some of the quotes coming from some leaders within the FAIR organization a couple decades ago that certainly not just politically incorrect, but, you know, not necessarily the best way, I don't think, to talk about immigrants in a general sense. Do you think that can also hurt some of what you're hoping to get in this mission?
Well, I think that you have to treat all human beings with dignity and respect. I mean, you know, the opposition has a problem with the term illegal alien. I use that because that's what's in the code. That's what's in our law. That's the legally correct term. Undocumented is a euphemism. It's mushy. It means nothing. They have documents, by the way, possibly even your birth certificate and your social security number to be able to work. Every human being is deserving of respect. You're absolutely right. That being said, you must enforce the laws. We can't pick and choose. The laws exist for a reason. You know, we're protecting American jobs. Everyone just can't come into the country when they want. There's 4 million people on the backlog waiting their turn who have paid the fees and filed the application to immigrate here. You can't cut in line.
Should it be easier for those folks to come into this country legally? The ones who have decided to go the sort of the legal route?
Well, should it be easier?
When we're talking about reforms, obviously part of the reform has to be an immigration policy that makes sense. Now, obviously, that's subjective depending on who you talk to. But, you know, someone who right now who's committed to becoming an American citizen is going through the proper channels. Should it be a little bit easier for them to actually become American citizens at the same time, making it more difficult for people who are trying to cross the border illegally?
Well, that's an idea. And I mean, I'm not sure it's, I'll tell you something personal here. My wife is an immigrant from Brazil, a Latin American country, and she came in legally. We had to pay fees. We had to file an application. It's not really a particularly egregious process. What it is, we can only assimilate so many people into the jobs market, into America at a time. I mean, I live in the Washington, D.C. area. My goodness, you know, my commute is just outrageous. And if you just keep adding people and adding people and adding people, quality of life just hits the bottom. So, you know, we there's a purpose. The federal government is not trying to be cruel. There's a purpose behind the caps that we have established under the law.
But you're not a closed, you're not taking a position of closing off citizenship, period, correct?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. No, I am not. I don't take that position. You know, immigration is a good thing, when it serves the interests of the American people. And that's the underlying key here. And certainly we began this discussion talking about sanctuary cities. How does it serve the American people by keeping criminals in our communities? It makes no sense whatsoever.
The Immigration Reform Law Institute, you can find their top 10 list over at irli.org. We've been talking with Dale Wilcox. He's the executive director of the organization. Dale, thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show. We are live in the Online Trading Academy studio. A little bit of breaking news that is mostly breaking because it just happened and we happened to follow it, but it's not all that important just yet. We'll have a bigger breakdown tomorrow, but the MLS decided to cave to Antifa lunatics and Antifa domestic terrorists. So now you're allowed to bring and wave your Iron Front flag at games at MLS stadiums, including, of course, at CenturyLink for Sounders games. Now, I'm sure that this is a perfectly sound and reasonable decision and won't result in any blowback to the MLS like the first time a Trump supporter decides to bring a big MAGA flag or a bunch of Proud Boys decide to show up to the game. I'm sure that won't happen, and none of this will come back to bite the MLS and the commissioner Don Garber on the backside. I'm certain of it. Right. Imagine being really passionate about fighting, not for being anti-fascist, which losers pretend they are when really they're anti-conservative and will justify violence against anyone who's perceived as having different political opinions than them. Imagine fighting for that. Imagine fighting on the side of the guy who went to Tacoma at the detention center to throw basically homemade bombs, incendiary devices at the detention center, putting agents who are working there and their lives on the line. Cool. You got it, Sounders. Good for you guys. Really tough. I want to talk about something that happened yesterday to a friend of mine, Michael Knowles from the Daily Wire. He was on Fox News and he was on with Harris Faulkner, who was filling in. Chris Hahn was there, a radio talk show host I've never heard of. And Michael said something that a little bit taken out of context, a little bit, but he certainly said something that I personally don't agree with. They were talking about Greta Thunberg, the political activist on climate change. And he decided to insult her in a way that I don't know if he intended. I think he was trying to make a bigger point about the people who exploit him. It did not go well, and it resulted in not just his name trending. Usually when people's names trend, it's either because they're dead or they did something bad. Now, I suppose glass half full is he's alive and healthy, but he said something that progressives deemed, and frankly, some conservatives deemed bad as well.
Ironically, there was a study that came out of Carnegie Mellon University in 2015, which showed that meatless diets are actually far worse for the environment than the regular meat-filled diets. They increase emissions, they increase energy use, they increase water use. But none of that matters because the climate hysteria movement is not about science. If it were about science, it would be led by scientists rather than by politicians and a mentally ill Swedish child who is being exploited by her parents.
Yeah, so the mentally ill Swedish child part, because she has autism, which is not a mental illness. It is a disability, I suppose, but it's definitely not a mental illness. It's not talked about in that way, and it gives enough ammunition to people who are bad faith actors to go after Michael Knowles. Now, on this clip, you're about to hear Chris Hahn, the radio show host that no one's ever heard of, going way over the top in a smart way because he realizes he can exploit this. He can make himself seem good, but no, he's not. He's going to play into a role that he knows is going to get him a lot of clicks.
By the international
left.
How dare
you?
So what you're seeing here is a political movement and a religious movement, and it's fulfilling religious and political goals of the left, but it isn't doing very much for science.
Chris, you had a visceral reaction to that. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, you're a grown man and you're attacking a child. Shame on you. She's trying
to
do what
she thinks
is
left for exploiting a mentally ill
child. Now, relax, skinny boy.
Okay, by the way, relax, skinny boy. He is skinny. Okay. Again, if I were a bad faith actor, I'd point out that you're body shaming, Michael.
That sounds like a burn that like a grandma comes up with. Like, get some meat on those bones.
Okay,
skinny boy.
Shut your mouth, except eat another chicken cutlet. Okay, continue.
I got this. Okay,
oh, I got
you're attacking
this, guys.
A child. You're a grown man. Have some coot.
I'm not. I'm attacking the left for exploiting a mentally
ill child. Maybe on your podcast, you get away and say whatever you want because nobody's listening. You're on national.
Oh, such a burn, even though Michael Knowles and his podcast is very widely viewed or listened to. I honestly, and this is not me being a jerk and burning Chris Hahn, I have no clue who this guy is. He's a former staffer for Schumer, I'm told. They introduced him as a radio show host. I don't know if that's true. That might have just been an error.
If they're handing that title out to anybody, I call dibs.
Well, no, I'm already the host.
No, but
television.
I'm an actor.
Be a grown up when you're talking about children. She's trying to save the planet because your president doesn't believe in climate change.
But he's your president too, you big dummy.
Kids need to take to the streets to worry about their future. You are despicable for talking to her about her like that, and you should apologize on national television right now.
I think the international left and her parents who are exploiting a girl with many mental illnesses.
You called her mentally ill. Take it back now.
She is mentally ill.
Take it back now.
She is mentally ill. She has autism. She has obsessive compulsive disorder. She has selective mutism. She had depression.
You are despicable.
Her mother wrote about this in a book. You can inveigh all you want, but unfortunately, you don't have any facts on your side.
You're despicable.
I am despicable.
Grown up. Be a grown up.
I am despicable. So, okay. Again, I don't think Michael should have said mentally ill in this case in that way. I don't think that it's an argument that he's going to be able to win, even if he might feel he's factually accurate on that. It's just, it's bad. It's a bad look. And you can tell it's a bad look because not only did it start to trend, but even Fox News ended up putting out a statement. They said the comment made by Michael Knowles, who was a guest on The Story Tonight, was disgraceful. We apologize to Greta Thunberg and to our viewers. Now, no one's truly offended by this. They just know that it's something that's easy to jump on. Again, I think his point was very clear, and he's right, that adults are exploiting children for their own personal political positions that they're trying to, you know, earn some extra street cred on. And so they're using this kid for that purpose. If he did not use the term mentally ill, this would not be a talking point at all. So he used a term that he probably shouldn't have used, that he should not have used, because I disagree with the way he used it. But I'm not going to pretend that his greater point wasn't right. And I'm not going to pretend that Chris Hahn isn't trying to take advantage of the, oh, skinny boy. Like, okay, we know exactly what you're doing, and it's really lame. But yeah, thank you for noticing. It's Jason Rancho.